Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I will be reading excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, January 16th, Sunday, January 17th, and Monday, January 18th. We'll begin with Saturday's paper, January 16th, page A1. Our headline reads, Move to Tier 2. McLean County shifts to looser COVID restrictions. The coronavirus region that includes McLean County is among those moving to Tier 2 mitigations. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced Friday, but that doesn't mean that some restrictions from Tier 3 won't carry over into the coming weeks. Region 2, which includes McLean, Peoria, Woodford, Tazewell, LaSalle, and Livingston counties, is among those who met the criteria for the rollback defined by the Illinois Department of Public Health as having experienced less than 12% test positivity rate for 3 consecutive days and greater than 20% available intensive care unit and hospital bed availability and declining COVID hospitalizations in 7 out of the last 10 days. All 11 of the state's coronavirus regions have been under Tier 3 mitigations since November 20th. When the data showed infections and hospitalizations rising precipitously shortly before Thanksgiving, we needed to tighten up considerably to prevent our hospitals from becoming overwhelmed, Pritzker said during a COVID-19 press conference. As usual, most Illinoisans took those mitigations very seriously. As a result, regions 1, 2, and 5 have been moved out of Tier 3 into Tier 2, Pritzker said. We have been watching the sign for a month now, and our country, or county that is, and our region have made great progress, Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight. We have been maintaining that 20% capacity in ICU, and our hospitalizations have been decreasing as a region. Today, our regional positivity was 8.1%, and it was over 12% a while back. We have definitely made progress, but we still have a ways to go. We encourage everyone to continue to work hard, but we are seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. The move to Tier 2 reopens museums at 25% capacity and lowers the return of low risk and allows rather the return of lower risk youth sports and the return of group fitness class. Cassandra Newman, Vice President of Operations for the Four Seasons Health Club, which has 2 Bloomington locations, said bringing members together for fitness class again is very exciting. People are wanting to get active, and they're craving community more than ever. And this mitigation helps with that, the Tier 2, she said. When the region returned to Tier 1 in November, all group fitness classes moved to online, locker room access was limited, and constant mask mandates were implemented throughout the gyms. This rollback brings much of that back, which is very helpful and will be welcome to our members, Newman said, adding that virtual classes will still be offered for members who don't want to work out in person. Part of the changes at Four Seasons will include group swim lessons starting Monday for kids. Several safety measures remain in place, but it's good to get them active, Newman said of the kids. The Children's Discovery Museum, in Uptown Normal, is also looking forward to bringing kids back for including camps, classes, and small group events. Although general play is still closed, Executive Director Beth Wissman said they are excited for this progress. We miss our kids so much, Ms. Wissman said, and while virtual events are good, they want something hands-on. In person is what we do best, so we are excited to be able to do it. Since children's museums don't quite fit into the same category as traditional museums, Wissman said statewide facilities are interpreting things a little differently, using local guidelines as well as state mandates. Starting in-person programs again is really good for the kids and it's good for the families, and Wissman said they hope to reopen fully in the spring. But other significant differences between Tier 1 and Tier 3 can be difficult to see, especially since one of the most noted coronavirus mitigation strategies is the inability for bars and restaurants to offer dine-in or indoor service. Tier 2 doesn't lift that restriction, meaning limited to carry-out order. On Thursday, the Illinois Restaurant Association again voiced its opposition to the continued restriction upon indoor services, which had been in effect in Region 2 since October 30th, mitigations. Eating and drinking, Illinois lost 31,000 jobs in November alone, IRA President and CEO Sam Toya said in a news announcement. This is the highest rate of hospitality job loss in the entire country, and three times as many as the closest state. We are also one of the of only three states with a complete of indoor dining. Restaurants are out of time, and they need a more reasonable and immediate path forward to save the industry. Pritzker said he empathizes with the burden Illinois restaurants have faced, saying that bars and restaurants have carried an extremely heavy burden throughout this public health crisis, through no fault of their own. Should any regions meet the criteria for Tier 1 coronavirus mitigations, Pritzker said restaurants and bars in those areas will be able to serve food to operate indoors at 25% capacity per room with tables of no more than four people. Pritzker said that decision came from a review of data that indicated a careful and limited reopening of bars and restaurants in regions that have attained Tier 1 will not lead to a resurgence in coronavirus cases. The governor also announced Friday that beginning next week, the state will be bringing online hundreds of vaccination sites across the state, including retail pharmacy chains location, Illinois National Guard-run mass vaccination locations in northern, central, and southern Illinois hospitals and urgent care locations, as well as hospitals, urgent care locations, and doctors' offices and large employers who can host their own workplace clinics. On January 19th, the National Guard will activate a new flexible mobile team to assist local health departments by expanding their existing vaccination efforts. On July 25th, National Guard-led sites, in addition to Walgreens and CVS using limited vaccine from the federal government, will kick off Phase 1 vaccination rollout, meaning frontline workers such as grocery store employees, agricultural workers, daycare employees, and have their turn at receiving the vaccine. We are anxious to get vaccinated, but in these next few weeks at least, patience is our watchword. And also from page one, McLean County to widen vaccinations. People over 65, frontline workers, eligible on Monday. McLean County residents 65 and over, and all residents who qualify under Phase 1B of the Illinois Department of Health vaccination rollout, can begin scheduling appointments on Monday. This includes healthcare workers, individuals 65 and older, and essential frontline workers, said McLean County Health Administrator Jessica McKnight. Appointments are required at clinics at this time, while the supply of the vaccine remains limited. The health department's website has been updated with upcoming clinic information and ways that residents can schedule appointments, she said. Distribution of this vaccine is going to take some time, and it's going to take collective collaboration, that is, across our entire healthcare system, she said. Individuals in Phase 1A and 1B can schedule an appointment on the health department's website, and more clinics will be added as necessary, she said. McKnight said rough estimates indicate there are about 15,000 McLean County residents who qualify under Phase 1A, and Phase 1B includes an estimated 50,000 individuals in McLean County, she said. We are encouraging people to be patient right now because our vaccine supply depends on the state and their vaccine supply depends on the government's supply, she said. What we get each week varies. We are scheduled or dedicated to getting out as close to 100% of the vaccine within the week that we can. We are receiving about 2,200 doses for next week as a community. The health department reported 146 new cases of COVID-19 on Friday, bringing the total number of cases to nearly 13,000 since mid-March. As of Friday morning, 12,975 confirmed and probable cases have been reported in the county. Officials report 849 McLean County residents are isolating at home, and 11,967 residents have been released from isolation and are considered recovered. This week, 614 new cases of the novel coronavirus were reported in McLean County. That includes 5 cases under the age of 1, 109 between the ages of 1 and 17, 28 cases for 18 and 19-year-olds, 105 residents in their 20s, 88 in their 30s, 71 in their 40s, 92 in their 50s, 62 in their 60s, 24 cases in their 70s, 19 in their 80s, and 11 in their 90s. There has been 134 deaths reported in McLean County due to COVID-19. The rolling 7-day positivity rate is 8.1% through Thursday. The preliminary 7-day statewide test positivity from January 8th through Thursday is 7.7%. On the local page A3, the first headline reads, County opens COVID call site. Staff available to answer questions by phone weekdays. The McLean County Health Department's COVID-19 call center is now open. McLean County residents with questions about the coronavirus can now call 309-888-5600 to get answers. The call center opened Friday morning. Hours are 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. They've been running for a little while and doing training, said Jessica McKnight, administrator for the McLean County Health Department, that is. We had kind of a soft opening where we have them internally sending calls to each other. Several staff members are available to take calls, and multiple lines are available to take calls, she said. Additional staff was hired for the call center, she said. It has been in conjunction and with collaboration with our contact tracing program, she offered. A lot of the questions are about isolation and quarantining, and now we're getting into a lot of questions about vaccination. It's been a good collaboration with the team we already had in place there, but we did hire additional staff specifically for the call center. And another headline, pilot bound for Lincoln lands on I-57 median. The pilot of a more than 60-year-old plane en route to Lincoln successfully landed the vintage aircraft onto a southern Illinois highway's median after it lost engine power, police said. The pilot was not injured when he landed the single-engine plane Wednesday night onto Interstate 57's median in Williamson County, about 6 miles south of Marion. Illinois State Police said Thursday the pilot was the only occupant of the aircraft, which sustained minor damage in the landing about 15 miles southeast of Carbondale. Also from page A3, headline reads, King Gospel Festival online this year. The Martin Luther King National Holiday Gospel Festival that usually takes place at Illinois Wesleyan University will take place in a virtual format Monday because of COVID-19 pandemic restrictions. Videos of performances and speakers were edited together for a 2-hour presentation that will be streamed from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Monday at www.iwu.edu/gospelfest. It will be available on demand after that time. This is the 31st year for the annual festival, presented by IWU and the United Community Gospel Singers of Bloomington Normal. The festival honors the legacy of King, who spoke at IWU in 1961 and 1966. This year's performers will be BCAI, School of Art Praise Team, Doc Smith and the Disciples of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, singers of Bloomington Normal Mass Choir, and Voices of Power. There will also be a presentation by Deanne Richberg, Artistic Director and Founder of Brown Body, based in St. Paul, Minnesota. Brown Body is a nonprofit repertory performing arts company that blends modern dance, theater, and figure skating focused on issues of social justice. The group will also present a workshop to faculty and staff earlier in the day. Students will not have class on Monday, but there will be a professional development day for faculty and staff with the theme, Undoing Racism Through Creative Practice for Racial Healing. All activities will be done virtually. Franklin Larry, director of IWU's School of Music, will give the keynote address on Truth, Healing, and Hope that will be followed by the workshop presented by Brown Body. A workshop also will be presented by interim chaplain Monica Corsano and Meg Miner, University archivist and special collections librarian, that will focus on the local history of race and race relations. And from Sunday's paper, virtual MLK Awards event focuses on principles. This year's Martin Luther King Junior Awards program was broadcast Saturday afternoon on YouTube, but the virtual format of the event did nothing to dampen the spirit of those participating. Some 77 viewers tuned in for the 1 p.m. premiere, typing their words of congratulations and encouragement into the live chat feature. Nikita Richards, Community Relations Manager with the City of Bloomington, served as Mistress of Ceremonies for the 45th annual event presented by the Bloomington and Normal Human Relations Commission. She opened with a welcome, a tribute to past year's award winners, and a moment of silence for Barbara Jean Adkins, the first Black Deputy City Manager for the City of Bloomington and an advocate for fair housing, civil rights, and efforts to end racism, who died November 7, 2020. Three guest speakers reflected on how King's six principles of nonviolence apply in today's society. Camilla Taylor, co-chair of the Not in Our Town Steering Committee and NIOT Schools, wondered how King would react to the news headlines of 2020. From the killing of George Floyd to the COVID-19 pandemic, he would have taken solace in the stories of neighbors helping neighbors, and a satisfaction in the peaceful protests against systemic racism, she said, referring to the principles of winning friendship and understanding and choosing love instead of hate. Other principles, like that of defeating justice, not people, are harder to embrace. Taylor said, in closing, she urged viewers to live a courageous life, speak up and speak out, and get involved whether your talents or gifts will be benefit the most. Doris Houston, interim assistant to the president for diversity and inclusion at Illinois State University, shared that she was only six when King was assassinated. And while she didn't fully understand the situation as a child, she sensed his greatness by the reaction from her parents, teachers, and community members. How can we reconcile the principles of nonviolence as we continue to experience the relentlessness of numbers of Black lives cut short by violence, she asked. It takes courage to question the status quo, she said, and it involves difficult conversations with ourselves and others. We must hold ourselves accountable to dismantling the structures to social injustice that reside in our very own neighborhoods, workplaces, and companies, banking systems, government bodies, places of worship, and schools, she said. As good and just people, it is up to us to make the change we desire. No excuses. Brandon Caffe, assistant principal of Normal Community West High School, that's Brandon Caffe, assistant principal of Normal Community West High School, pointed out that nonviolence was King's way of life, even though it cost him his own life. May we all find the courage to actively fight the challenges of today and transform America into the promised land Dr. King envisioned, Caffe said. Difficult days are still ahead, but the promised land is within our reach. Following a monologue by actor Gregory D. Hicks, the 2021 Student Award winners were announced, and each gave a brief speech thanking their nominees, families, and mentors, congratulating their fellow award winners, and reflecting on King's legacy. As we stand, or Zoom, or YouTube here today, We are fortunate enough to consult Dr. King's legacy as we work, said Yevin Shin, a senior at University High School. That does not mean our work is any less difficult or that speaking up is any less extraordinary. Like Dr. King and his peers, we don't have the privilege of knowing how future generations will see us. But here, at least in this moment, I would like to thank everyone and express my belief that someday in the future, the will of our community will be celebrated just as Dr. King's was today. Shin was recognized along with Aditi Sharma, a senior at Normal Community High School, and Yasmin Jordan, a senior at Normal Community West High School. Finally, viewers heard the remarks from the two adult winners, Don Shandro of Bloomington, co-founder and executive director of the Coalescence Theater Project, and Dr. Crystal H. Shelvin, clinical services supervisor at the Livingston County Special Services Unit. The event concluded with Normal Community West senior Anaya Thompson singing Stand Up by Cynthia Eviro. And from the opinion page, C3, an article written by Ibu Patel, who is the founder and president of IFYC, an interfaith organization. He writes what King said about embracing enemies. This year's celebration of Martin Luther King Jr. Day comes less than 2 weeks after a violent white mob, inspired by entrenched racism and dressed-up Christian symbolism, attacked American democracy, leaving 5 people dead. As a black Christian minister leading a nonviolent movement for civil rights, Martin Luther King Jr. came to know such mobs well. What might we learn from how King dealt with such mobs in his own lifetime? It is reasonable to believe that King would support holding people accountable for crimes committed, but King also held a higher hope for at least some of those who were part of the mob, namely that they might be changed. It was toward the end of the Montgomery bus boycott, after enduring a year of death threats, false arrests, and firebombings from white mobs, that King spoke of the glorious opportunity to inject a new dimension of love into the veins of our civilization. It was precisely when others had shown themselves at their worst that it was most important for righteous people to love your enemies, bless them that curse you, pray for them that despitefully use you. He concluded, this is the time for reconciliation. This is the time for redemption. This is the time to build the beloved community. Let us be clear about how remarkable this is. Some of the people he was advocating for had attempted to burn down King's home, seriously endangering his wife and their new baby. And still King believed they could change. In 1966, while leading a march for fair housing in Chicago, King was faced with a similar mob, and he reacted in much the same way. The several hundred peaceful demonstrators he led through the Marquette Park neighborhood were met by a crowd of thousands of people, mostly ethnic whites, frothing with hate. They screamed racial epithets at him. He kept marching. They threw rocks and bottles. One hit him in the head. He went down on his knee, wiped the blood up, got up, and kept marching. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw a group of teenagers jeering at him. Somehow, King escaped his security detail, walked up to them and said something to the effect of, "You all are so smart and good-looking. Why would you want to stoop so low?" Without a doubt, the anchor for King's action was his Christian faith. King truly believed that all of us are created in the image of God, that love is the center of the gospel, and that it is the only force capable of changing an enemy into a friend. In addition to his spiritual commitment to use love and to turn enemies into friends, King was working on a deeply pragmatic strategy. He understood a profound truth about democracy. You have to live with the people you defeat. Moreover, they have all the same powers of citizenship as you do. They can hold rallies to promote their views, raise money for favorite causes, and run candidates for office. even if they go to jail for committing crimes, they get out at some point. And so you have a stake in them being better than their worst selves. King believed that people change when they are reminded of their God-given potential for both greatness and goodness. And so he effectively says to the racist mobs, "This is not all that you can be. Your potential is so much greater than this. Even though I am the target of your hate, I see so much more in you. I am going to remind you of that greatness and goodness, and then I'm going to convince you that I'm building a world that your greatness and goodness can manifest. You will like yourself better in that world, and in that world we will all be like brothers and sisters." There are few people in the world with the special talent for evil, a talent for bringing out the worst in others. But if we are to have a healthy and diverse democracy, more of us will need to have the opposite talent, the Martin Luther King Jr. talent of seeing in people who are at their worst that they can be something better. Sometimes we have to tell those people a story that encourages them to be better and their better self, even when their ugliness is directed at the things we consider most precious. King knew it was good for them, but it was also good for him. When people are at their worst, our enemies and our friends, we all lose. When people are at their best, and our enemies and our friends, we all win. And from page C7 of Sunday's paper, a pandemic diversion and animal ambassador. On the first weekend after Chicago's Shedd Aquarium was forced to close because of the coronavirus that was endangering the country, the penguin handlers had an idea. Taking advantage of the building's quiet halls, the empty spaces where normally tourists would congregate in front of fish displays, they brought the rockhopper penguin Wellington to the Amazon Rising exhibit full of South American aquatic wildlife. Wellington looked up, he looked left and right, then back at handler Michelle Natowski, who was recording the scene on her phone. Then he walked over to one of the big tanks in front of him and seemed especially taken by the red-bellied piranhas and black-barred silver dollars passing by. In those 27 seconds, a star was born. That short, simple Wellington video has been the greatest viral sensation Shedd has had, more so even than the 2014-15 buzz over the rescued baby seal otter Luna. As of this writing, Twitter users have watched the video more than 3.7 million times. In that and the subsequent series known as Penguin Field Trips, he and his fellow Shedd Rockhopper and Magellanic penguins kept homebound humans entertained throughout the pandemic year merely by displaying their natural curiosity in settings ranging from Shedd exhibits to other museums to Chicago's Soldiers Field. "Can we please get more of this?" said one of the first comments in response to that initial penguin field trip video. "Please, I need a longer version," said another. During a year when it will have been closed almost as many days as it's been open, the aquarium saw its social media engagement skyrocket. Twitter and Instagram followers more than doubled to 156,000 and 296,000 respectively. Facebook audience grew 30%. And the penguin field trip phenomenon has been global. The aquarium has heard from fans on all 7 continents, it said, even Antarctica. "It was Friday the 13th when Shedd closed for what people initially thought was going to be 14 days, recalls Andrea Rogers, the institution's vice president for public relations and external affairs. And then, as most of Illinois and the aquarium stayed shut longer than 2 weeks, the staff began thinking about extending the field trip concept. It evolved from "let's show what's going on at the aquarium" to all of a sudden they were those ambassadors of curiosity and exploration. They're the ones looking at nature in the eye, and we're experiencing it with them instead of the other way around. This has been Rita Schulte with the first half hour of excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph for Saturday, January 16th, Sunday, January 17th, and Monday, January 18th. I will return in just a little while with part 2. Please stand by.